Onu kehanetimin randesi yargın önceden açılığa gerçek şirin müden yemedesin. Tamam, bir şunu kadar yakışan kuşlar ve dilişim ve teradın etsanı nitin anı. Namaste, Sarasvati Devi Garavan. Hare Krishna, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday topical class. We will be speaking on ethics as a continuation of previous class given by His Holiness Yadunandana Swami. And maybe I shouldn't say this, but I really try to avoid giving this class throughout the year in various ways. But somehow Maharaj told that I really have to give this class, so I apologize for you have to listen to me because I really feel I'm not qualified. But with your association, with your blessings, I might speak something relevant today, and which will be also for pleasing our lordships and for my own purification. I will take this garland. As I mentioned, we will speak about ethics today. We all know that we have to bring some moral decisions up in our life. And I would say in our Krishna consciousness, we don't speak much about ethics because we have four regulative principles. We have we have to chant at least 16 rounds a day, and ethics is something that follows because we need not to be say that we shouldn't kill, we shouldn't do abortion or something which people from outside need to hear, because from us is normal. We are chanting, we are connected to the Lord, and we follow rules and regulations given by Srila Prabhupada, and therefore we are acting morally. But I would like to give, as I said, like this class is coming from a different perspective. I would like to look at the history of ethics in the West and from a perspective of Vaishnava tradition, to give a critical opinion of Western ethics. And also I would like to speak about one book which a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati wrote. It's called Amritavani, Nectar of Instruction. There are 108 instructions to a devotee. And also because today is a very auspicious day of appearance day of Sri Sri Radha Ramanji, it is also both festivals celebrated in Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. Also, it is appearance day of many devotees. Srinivas Acharya, Madhavendra Puri, and Parameshwar Das Thakur. Disappearance there of Parameshwar Das Thakur and appearance there of Madhavendra Puri and Srinivas Acharya, yes. So this will be the second part of the class. So speaking of ethics, ethics comes from a Greek word ethikos, which refers to the ethos, which means the custom, the character, or the usage. Therefore, ethical behavior is that which is in accordance to a virtuous character and virtuous behavior. Term morality, which is very similar term, it comes from Ciceron. He used to comment on Aristotle's work, and also gave some translations. So, but it is more concerned of with the character of the person who performs these actions. Greek ethics is very much concerned with the term of eudaimonia, which means happiness, but not in terms of sense gratification, but happiness as a general state of spirit, as a well-being. So, first I would like to speak about Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. As we see, they are Gyanis, they follow the path of Jnana, if you look at it from our perspective, because they believed that we act morally because we know what is good, what is right or wrong. But they are elitist in a way that they say that only philosophers know the supreme truth, like the Brahmanas in India, like sages in India, similarly. And Plato gives gives analogy, one analogy from the cave. People who live in the cave, they cannot see the light, therefore they cannot see what is surrounding them. And they see only shapes, they don't see the things as they are. But people, philosophers who go out of the cave, they see the world. But as I said, this is an elitistic approach. And Socrates also, he didn't write anything, but Plato mentioned his basic essential teachings in his dialogues. So what happened with Socrates, he was he also taught the same thing, that one acts morally because he knows what is right and wrong, and therefore, but what is with those people who don't know, or those who know but they don't act accordingly? But they didn't explore this topic in depth, which is very problematic, because the whole Western philosophy is based on these teachings. And I will try to explain why is it that Western ethics is godless. The man is in the center, and the God is somewhere away from it. Aristotle, he wrote a book called Nicomachean Ethics, which is, his father was called Nicomach, and his son was also called Nicomach. So we are not sure if it refers to his father's teachings or his son later compiled his own teachings. He said that the happiness comes from philosophical speculation combined with life of prudence and the search of virtue. Habit of virtuous behavior leads to virtuous character, and it is reserved only for philosophers, as we can see. So Aristotle, truly happy man, is a philosopher and not a saint, which is very interesting, because they didn't have the holy scriptures, they didn't have religious scriptures in ancient Greek time. There is something mentioned in Homer. We can see that they were worshipping something like some personalities like demigods, but actually they didn't have one god, they didn't have like monotheistic system, they didn't have scriptures, therefore their philosophy is devoid of scriptures, devoid of God in a way. God as a person. Because their demigods, they were both good and evil, they were doing mischievous things. So they were worshipping them in a way, but they were their own center of their life. As we can see, Aristotle's ethics is also aristocratic ethics, because he was living in a time, he was very wealthy. And it is very easy if you have a lot of money, and then you're like in a higher position in a society. Slaves are taking care of everything. In the Greek society, they had slaves. They're taking care of everything. You have nannies to raise the children, so you're basically free. And inheritance with a life saved in life. So they had a lot of free time to speculate. But out of their system, we see that it's not a very healthy system, because although non-Greek people, they were actually enemies. They were barbarians for the Greek people, and they were therefore candidates for slavery. If there were be some political arrangements, then they could be slaves, because they were not aristocratic people. Also, they had friendships only because of with foreigners. They made friendships just because of the interest. And women, they were also of a lower class than men, similar to slaves, which Aristotle also mentions. Just to let you know that on Aristotle, philosophy is the basics of Western philosophy. So it is very sad, actually, that these teachings are present even today. But Christian theologians, they try to combine these teachings with the scriptures, with the Bible. So therefore we have Augustine, Saint Augustine, in the 3rd or 4th century, And his ethic is also eudaimonistic, which means that the happiness is also the aim of it. But he said that happiness cannot be found without God, which is a very, very big difference. And then he refers to what Jesus said and in New Testament, and also what the prophet said in Old Testament, that you love your God with all your heart, with all your soul and all mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And he was actually he centered God again in the philosophy. He also took the Saint John maxim that love God and do what you will. But this is a very problematic statement, because if we are on the beginner's level, we cannot simply love God. How can you love God if you don't know how to love, right? So this is very problematic. Maybe not for him, because he was a saint, but for other people. But he didn't develop much of the teachings for that. In our Krishna conscious society, we have the similar phrase, which is always think of Krishna, never forget him. Why do I say that? Because if you love someone, then of course you will always remember him. So it is the same rule of love. But it is also, for us it's not problematic, because we have our acharyas who are saying, what should we do? We are on Kanishtha Dikari level, then Madhyama, and then Uttama. We are gradually developing our consciousness of God, but they didn't know how, because when you are on the stage of prema bhakti, then there are no rules anymore. You love God, you love all living beings, and you know how to act. But when you are when you are in a lower level levels, then you need instructions. I would like to mention another philosopher. He's Saint Thomas Aquinas. And he is a little bit more critical towards the Western, ancient Greek philosophy, because he says that what Aristotle calls happiness is not real happiness, is imperfect happiness. Therefore, his ethics is based on a temporal happiness, and which is attainable only in this life. So why should we follow that? Why should we follow something which will bind us to this material life? But from Saint Thomas, the perfect happiness is attainable only in the next life. It's not life in samsaric circle, but the next life in heaven, like when you're free. But we say different. We say that happiness can be attained in this life as well. In devotional service to God, we can attain happiness also in this life, which is very positive and optimistic, because we don't put our hope somewhere far away from us. We have them with us here, and we strive to get liberated, actually. Not just liberated, but to attain Krishna. So Saint Thomas Aquinas, he said that perfect happiness lies only in the vision of God. And only rational creatures can attain it by knowledge and the love. So this is jnana mishra bhakti. It's not fully jnana, it's not fully bhakti. It's both. He also formed something which is called lex naturalis, which is natural law. It has been, as the word says, it's natural. It's something that comes from the nature of human. So he, unlike Saint Augustine, he didn't consider human nature to be spoiled, to be useless. But although imperfect, human nature is created by God. But there is something which is not quite logical here. How can God create something which is imperfect? They don't explain. They fail to explain that. Of course, we know that God is situated in our heart as Paramatma, and therefore that but Paramatma is a different entity we are not the same as Paramatma, but if we are on a lower stage, we think that we are also Paramatma. When we get inspiration from God, we say that comes from us, which is not correct. And therefore, we know how to explain that our nature is not perfect, but God is perfect. And if we purify our heart, we come to the perfect level. we become perfect, perfectly realized. He also said that purpose of human life is to live, to reproduce, to learn, to have ordered society, and to worship God. If we just exclude the God worship, this is again a materialistic concept, what Prabhupada said, to reproduce, to learn. It's all connected to the material world again. So this philosophy is very weak, because if you don't know God, if you don't know how to worship God, then everything, then you fall again. He explains, he compiled a few teachings here. He took the Aristotle's four cardinal virtues, which is prudence, temperance, fortitude, and justice. And then he took the Ten Commandments from the Bible, and excluding the observing the Sabbath, and they put the observing the Sunday, right? He also took the St. Paul virtues, faith, hope, and charity. But as we see, like we have in Bhagavad Gita explained many more. Krishna said a lot more. For instance, in 10:4-5, Krishna said that all good and bad qualities are created by him, such as intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and illusion, tolerance and forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, happiness and distress, birth and death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity and penance, charity, fame and infamy. So it's quite a lot. And then in the 13th chapter, 8-12, he also said that he declared which of the qualities are in knowledge and others are in ignorance. So those in knowledge are humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, and old age and disease, detachment, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant things, events, constant and unalloyed devotional service to him, then aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. So according to those, I did a little bit of research in I traveled through the Amritavani book of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he also mentions there are few basic principles. They're basically the same as what Bhakti Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in Rupa's work. He mentions the five or six principles, which are of course associating with spiritual master and association with devotees. He said that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that spiritual master is personification of Krishna's mercy, and he manifests before us. When we are ready, he will manifest, and according to the Krishna desire, according to the Krishna plan. So everything is arranged actually for us. Everything is waiting for us. Another principle is hearing Harikatha. How do we do that? Through the association. He also mentions that, which is also what our Srila Prabhupada taught, it's basically the same. But he kind of formulated it in a different way, saying that we attain association according to our qualification. It is not just only that, like sitting in a room with devotees, we will become purified, we will become pure devotees. It's not, we have to work, we have to invest effort in it. So he also mentions that chanting of the holy name is also very, very important, is actually essential. He said that this is a crest jewel of sadhanas, and it is limb of devotional service. So, but how do we chant the holy name? Again, we need association of spiritual master who will inspire us. We also need association of devotees who are good in chanting. He also mentions here in Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's again connected to the association with devotees. I have the personal experience here coming in Bhaktivedanta College when we studied Bhagavad Purana, we had Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Shastri. When we studied together the scriptures, it is completely different. And of course, every day here in the temple room, it is completely different. When you're reading alone, you cannot grasp the essence. Krishna is just not revealing somehow. Our mind is strong, our senses are pulling us everywhere. But when we are in the association of devotees, they give us the taste. They give us taste, and Krishna appears in this association. Also living in a holy place, but the holy place is everywhere where devotees are, and when the Harikatha is discussed, that is holy place. Therefore, this is also a holy place, because every day devotees are talking about Krishna, and they're associating together. So, I have some quotes here also from Amritavani. It is very, for me, it's very interesting. I hope you will also find it interesting how he stresses tolerance among devotees. It is very important for relationships, and also simplicity. Simplicity means non-duplicity. Just be straightforward, and this is very helpful, because then we know, then we see the person. If we don't, if for instance someone is talking behind your back, if someone is not straight with you, then you of course feel hurt, because then at the end of the day you find out that what this person is saying, and the relationship cannot be established, because there is no truthfulness in it, there is no simplicity, there is duplicity. Yeah? So, can you also imagine how is it when we are not straightforward with Krishna, when we are not simple-hearted with Krishna? He also said that we should rather try to rectify ourselves than blaming others, blaming the nature of others and activities of others. That is his instruction. So, do you have any questions or comments on this part? I would like to continue with some descriptions, some stories of... yes, please. They're used as a synonyms, but morality is more used for describing a character of the person. And ethics, ancient Greek philosophers, they were gyanis. They had a lot of theories. So ethics is this. It's a little bit theoretical. It's not practical. It describes what kind of life they were living, but it didn't give ethics as a discipline of philosophy. It didn't give advices to people how to develop the knowledge, how to behave morally. Yeah, they were thinking they were very self-satisfied. Yes. Oh, I didn't explore that. Yeah. I didn't explore that much. Yeah. Probably in Upanishad there are some. But as I said, the Greek philosophers and later followers, they were more like rationalistic, like they had rational point of view, and they systematized a lot. But they didn't, as I said, there were no scriptures then, and they didn't practice it. They didn't, live by the principle. They didn't live by the principle so that much. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. This is Dharma Shastra, yeah. Yeah, yeah. My point is that I didn't explore much because it's the ethics of Mahabharata and Dharma Shastras, because I wanted to actually emphasize how they were living by principle, by the higher principle actually, and by following Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and by association of devotees, we naturally develop these qualities. So we don't need some philosophers to say what is right or wrong, when we actually know Krishna is revealing to us. Therefore, I didn't that much explore on that. But it would be very interesting to compare the Mahabharata and then the Greek philosophies and like that. Thank you very much. Yeah, Lali. This is a very interesting question. Did you all hear what you said? What if we are by some circumstance we are not able to associate with devotees? What happens then? Because association is essential. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Namratavani, he said that association is not only physical. It's not only, he said that you cannot become a pure devotee just staying in a room with devotees if you not put the effort. So my own experience from my life, Krishna would give me some association, but then somehow, it's not that I would lose association, but he would move me to a material world where I had no association of devotees, and I would get certain tests in my life. So, and then suddenly devotees would appear later. But later I would understand that this was a test for me to pass it, because our goal should be that we are strong enough to preach, to go outside. And association, as I said, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said that it's not only physical, so we can associate through scriptures, through the lectures of spiritual master, through remembrance, Harikatha as well. Yeah. If we don't have association, the word is not speak to the world, but speak of Krishna, then it will invite bhakti. Yeah, so. Okay, I would just like to speak shortly on appearance of Sri Sri Radharamanji. I don't know how many of you know the story. I just found it out. I knew some parts, but I didn't know the whole story. As you might know, Lord Chaitanya was while traveling in South India. He was it was Chaturmasya season, which means rainy season. So he wasn't so much able to travel, and he spent 4 months during this season in Venkatabata's house, and he personally asked the Lord to stay in his house during this season. And he had a son, little Gopal, and while the Lord was honoring Prasad, Lord Gopal would come and he would pay obeisances to him. And Lord Chaitanya would put him on his lap and he would give him his Mahaprasad. And like that during these 4 months. And little Gopal, he was very attached to the Lord. And Lord instructed him when he was leaving, he said, stay in your house and serve your parents. But after your parents depart, go to Vrindavan. So at the age of 30, he went to Vrindavan and he met Rupa and Sanatana there. But and then Lord Chaitanya appeared to him in a dream and he said, if you want to meet me, go to... because Lord has departed already. And if you want, he was very sad, he felt a lot of separation. And the Lord in a dream, he said, go to Nepal. It is very interesting how he was actually in Vrindavan and Lord told him to go to Nepal. I mean, it's very interesting. So he went there, and when he took bath in Gandaki River, in his little pot, he found some shilas, few shilas, which are also like a deities, but he was thinking this is accident, so he put them back. And when he again took the water to wash himself, then again he found those shilas, and like that another time. So he recognized that as a sign of God. He wanted him to take these shilas. So he came back to Vrindavan, and what happened is that on Narsimha Chaturdashi, which we celebrated yesterday, he was praying to, he was remembering of Lord Narsimhadev's pastime, and he was praying to the Lord, like, please Lord, manifest in your, actually what happened before, one devotee approached to him, and he had some dresses or ornaments for the deity, and he came and he gave it to him. He said, I'm sorry, I cannot take it because my deities, they don't have the body as so I could dress it. So he said, no, please take it. I really want to give it to you. And he said, so Gopal Bhatta received the present. And then on the Nrisimha Chaturdashi day, he was praying to the Lord to manifest his bodily form also, so he can dress him. And another day, a day after, Radha Ramanji Diti, he manifested himself out of one shila. He had 12 shila total, so he had 11 shilas and Radha Raman Diti. And so today in Radha Raman Temple in Vrindavan, they celebrate 469th anniversary, and this temple is known as the example of deity worship. They are really, really attached to Radha Ramanji, and they perfectly perform their service. As you may know, there are Goswami families, and inside of the families, they are all grihasthas actually, and their children are trained how to worship. So it is not a random worship, but it's very, very advanced worship. And also, as you know, we call Radha Raman Diti, but there is also there is only Raman, there is only Krishna, and but on the altar there is a space for Radharani, of course. But when I was in Vrindavan, they explained it happened a few times that Krishna just manifested himself only in the form of Krishna without Radharani. And then it is said that Radharani is actually in his crown. She's the best of Krishna, so she's in Radharaman's crown. And she's worshipped as being there. No, I'm not sure, but one year ago I was there, and Radha Ramanji is always kind of alone. All the pictures are just him. Yeah, And we watched the video also. The other day we had sangha and we watched the video and it was also only. Really? Oh, maybe there's... You saw her. it is significant that Radharaman deity has very intricate features, including fingernails and even teeth, which is very unusual. On the backside of his body, there is a part of original Shalagram Shila from which he manifested. And one time there were some scientists, they wanted to look at Radharaman, and like they didn't believe how his self-manifested deity. So they looked thoroughly, and they couldn't find the evidence of carving, of making it. So it is proved that it's not done by human art, human endeavor. Also today is an appearance day of Srinivasacharya. He was a disciple of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And he was a Vaishnava in second generation, immediately following the Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But when he came to Vrindavan, there were no Rupa and Sanatana, and Lord Chaitanya wasn't there. So he was... There were a few accidents, like he would come and then he would find out that they are gone, and he would cry and he was very, very disturbed by that. But then he took shelter of Gopal Bhatta and Jiva Goswami. And it is explained that he had same features of the Lord, Chaitanya, and bodily luster. He had long, long arms, like up to the knees, like the Lord. And it is said that he's Gaura Shakti, that he's Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy, personification, embodiment of Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy. Like that. And also today's appearance day of Shri Madhavendra Puri. It's a pity that Madhavendra is not with us today, because I'm sure he knows some leelas and he would share it. Sri Madhavendra Puri was companion of Lord Nityananda, and they had many crazy pastimes, a lot of fainting and a lot of embracing tears and like that. It is also a disappearance day of Sri Parameshwar Das Thakur, who was a very dear servant of Janava Devi, Nityananda's wife. He was... there was one accident that happened in Sri Rampur. There was a festival of Nam Sankirtan going on within the temple of Lord Jagannath there. And Parameshwar Thakur, he was present there and he was dancing completely, got intoxicated. And some people passed there, and there was a dead fox on the road. So they were in an offensive mood, so they threw the fox in the middle of the Sankirtan party. And they didn't feel anger towards them, they just continued chanting. But the Parameshwar Das Thakur, he felt sad to an unfortunate fox, so he brought her to life. And the fox raised out and... And she went to put another direction, and they were very bewildered, and like then they started to appreciate the Parameshwar Das Thakur as a saint. Yes, so I would end on this note. If you have any comments, or if you would like to share some leelas. Yes, please. Yeah, Radharaman is very beautiful, and it's actually very hard to see him because he's very high. The altar is like very, very, I don't know if some of you probably there. The altar is very high, and then when you come, then you're immediately 5 meters away from him. You cannot come closer in, as here in the temple. And he's, maybe it is offense to say that he's smaller to measure him, but he has a quite, I mean, you have to like, see him really, like, you know, put an effort to see him. And yeah, they also, like these Goswamis who worship the Radharaman, they live around the temple, on the first floor. They're like little apartments and they all live there, so that they can come to the service anytime. And it's open, yeah, it closes at like 12:30, and really sharp 12:30. Like if you stay, you cannot just stay there. They politely ask you to go, and then later, like 4 or 5 o'clock, it opens again. But then in Vrindavan, if you're alone, it gets dark pretty early, so it's very kind of not so good to travel alone. For me, it was very difficult. Yeah, to meet him. But I was attacked by like 10 monkeys there. I was alone, and that time I didn't know the schedules of the temples. So I was just going, I started from after the morning program in Krishna Balaram Mandir. I went alone on Parikram, and I wanted to visit all the temples. So by the 12:30, I came to the Radharaman temple, but it was already closed and no one was there. And as you know, like it starts to be very hot, and then no one is there. All the devotees are inside their houses, and I was alone with a small bag, and I said, okay, I'm going to go somewhere, you know. And then suddenly, like, few monkeys, they came slowly. But if you're alone, they can really, like, they, one bit me after, but not in front of Radharaman temple. But they really, they measure the power, and when they see that you're alone and you're basically helpless, then they just group and they can, you know, do everything and anything. So I was attacked when he took me by the leg, another arm. I was full of monkeys jumping, and I was screaming. I was really scared, you know. I was in front of the temple, and I was alone, of course. And I was screaming, like, I didn't know that all the sadhus live there. These Goswamis, they're also initiating gurus, and they live there. But the doors are closed, so you cannot see. You don't know who is there and who is not there. And then one Baba, he came out with a huge stick, and he, like, you know, he protected me, and I was like, thank you, like you saved my life. You know, I was really scared. Yeah, so, but these monkeys are very, very special souls, so who knows who attacked me and why, what did I do in my previous lives. So it's like that. Yeah, and I wanted to just mention the boat festival, Radha Krishna boat festival. It is not so celebrated here in the West, but in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram temple, it's a very, very nice festival. I had an opportunity to be there. I don't know if you know that, like, you all probably know the structure of the temple. So in the center, there is like the stairs are going down. So they usually fill this the lower part with water, and I was so amazed. They do this during the night, so they decorated with the petals and flowers full, but it's quite huge. And with the flowers, they do different shapes, like mandalas or something really nice. And they prepare a boat for Radha and Krishna. They take Chota Radha and Krishna on the boat, and as they go around, They stop every 1 minute. They stop, and there is another devotee offering something to them, and there are a few devotees standing on the roof throwing down the petals, and everyone is singing. Indra Prabhu was singing with his group, and it was really like spiritual world. There is really something special, and I hope we will also have this tradition. We'll start with this tradition in the West. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much for tolerating me. So my duty is complete. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.